Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Your Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm hosting you and escorting you about the battle space of the war of ideas, which we are waging at the moment, with some superb contributors, starting with Tim Brown of TheBravest.com, a man who has distinguished himself as a first responder, a firefighter, and most recently as one of the heroes of the war of ideas since 9/11 against Sharia. We'll be talking with him about a very interesting press event we had outside the White House a short while ago, and about some of the insights that we're hoping the American people and our president will seize with respect to the threat posed to America by Sharia and its adherents. It'll be a subject we talk about as well in segment two with Andy McCarthy, Islamophobia being a prime topic for our conversation with Andy. The effort now to transform Muammar Gaddafi from the enemy he once was turned friend into the enemy again, and what the United States should be doing about all of that. Claire Lopez will be with us for segment three, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy. She will be talking about Iran, what it is up to at the moment, both at home and elsewhere in the Middle East and beyond, of real concern to us. We'll be getting into the question with her, are the Saudis next to face this insurrection, turmoil, and perhaps regime change, and what would that mean? And finally, segment four, we'll have Sarah Carter, our gal on the ground working the national security beat at the Pentagon and elsewhere here in Washington and around the world for the Washington Examiner. Sarah Carter and I will be discussing the idea of a no-fly zone over Libya. Is it feasible? Is the military putting up a stern fight against doing it, and why? Also, the loss of American servicemen in the latest terrorist attack, this one in Germany, and the charges being brought against Bradley Manning, the fellow accused of bringing about this mass core dump, as they say, to WikiLeaks. So a lot to talk about, and much of it having a lot of very important overtones for our security, and not least that which we'll discuss now with Tim Brown. Tim is with me here in our studio. Tim, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us in Washington, joining us for this little press event, and for your great work to help elevate the level of understanding about the problem that killed a lot of your friends and colleagues on 9/11. Tell us about The Bravest, first of all, and some of the other work that you're doing at the moment.
Sure. TheBravest.com is all about the New York City Fire Department website. Keep the world apprised of what's happening there. Keep the families apprised of things that are going on that affect us. And at the behest of a lot of the families in the 9/11 community, I got involved in this fight against Sharia law. You know, the law which those who murdered my friends were following. Because of great people like you and Andy McCarthy, I've learned a lot about it. And I will take this fight on happily. And we will push Sharia back where it belongs.
Mm. Well, from your lips to God's ears, as they say.
Right.
And you've been doing that, I know, in the years since you helped rescue a lot of people on 9/11, narrowly escaping death yourself on that occasion down by Ground Zero. You have really been in the forefront of the fight, I guess most recently against the Ground Zero Mosque and the travesty that represents as an example of this effort to try to insinuate.
It's very interesting that, in years past, the families had been divided on different issues in their beliefs. A certain number of families would be on one side and another group of families would be on the other. But with the Ground Zero Mosque, it has the families have banded together. The Democrats, the Republicans, the all faiths, you know, conservative, liberals, virtually 99% of the families are really hurt by what Imam Rauf and Daisy Khan are doing. You know, the Khan's Khan is what I call it.
Yeah, the Khan's Khan job, that's for sure. Tell us about the latest effort on the part of the Khan team to con us, and what you've been doing to try to
we found out maybe 5 days ago that they hijacked a play called Performing Tribute, which is a 9/11 play performed by people from the wonderful Tribute Center that Lee Iolpi put together. They tried to hijack the play and bring it up to New York's CARE headquarters, which also happens to be Daisy's headquarters and Imam Rauf's headquarters.
Imagine this is that. The Council on American Islamic Relations,
that's
an uninvited co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, and
that's right.
One of the groups that spun off of the Muslim Brotherhood's Islamic Association for Palestine.
Yeah,
this is just, I always think it's important to calibrate who it is we're talking about.
So
Daisy Khan, the wife of Faisal Abdul Rauf Khan, and the man himself, the imam who brought us this whole Cordoba house, are tied
Sharia Index
closely
project,
to this Muslim Brotherhood front organization.
Absolutely. And we found out about this a few days ago, that this play was going to be performed up there in their building. And the families went berserk. And so we said, well, we better nip this in the bud. And Rosaline Talon and Sally Reaganhart, two of the outspoken family members, started a media blitz on it. And we made some phone calls to the board of directors of the Tribute Center. And magically, by 5 p.m. last night, about 2 hours before the play was to be performed, it was canceled. You know, of course, they lied about that, too. They said the response was so overwhelming that they couldn't handle the crowd.
Yep.
But they didn't want the bad media.
Yeah.
Well, we caught them red-handed.
More power to you for the kind of clarity that you're bringing to this and pushback against these guys. Let's talk very quickly about the event opposite the White House in Lafayette Square.
Absolutely.
Just now. There were a number of folks, in addition to your good self, Andy Cochran from the Seventh Amendment Advocate, Khalid Jarais, a man who had lived under Sharia in Nubia, from Rescue Nubia, Tawfiq Hamid, a prominent Muslim reformist with the Islamic Society for Liberty and Modernity, couldn't join us in person, but he gave a very nice statement, which we read. Faith McDonald of the Institute on Religion and Democracy, Beverly Pearlson of the Band of Mothers, and
wonderful,
one or two others, I think, were making the case, basically, that this is not Islamophobia to point out what Sharia is up to, whether it's the violent kind that was inflicted upon us in 9/11 or the stealthy kind that what you've just described really is all about, the Faisal Rauf kind of operation. What was your takeaway from this event in Lafayette Square? What would you like the public to know about it?
Well, you know, I have to say I didn't know what Sharia law was a couple of years ago, and I've watched America get educated on it. Thanks to your good hard work.
Yeah, a lot of good people.
Yeah, a lot of good people. And I continue to be impressed with people that know about it. I spoke to a group of juniors and seniors from Maine, and high school kids, and I asked them to raise their hand if they knew what Sharia law was, and virtually all of them raised their hands.
Okay.
So I think what we did today is really important. And I think that if these Sharia promoters keep shouting Sharia, Sharia, that's good, because it gives us a Frank Gaffney teachable moment. And I think we took advantage of that today. There were a lot of cameras there. There were a lot of bloggers there. So I think we continue to beat the drum.
Well, we have to. And very quickly, tell us about Liberty Alliance Coalition and what you're doing with that.
Right. We started libertyrocks.org about a month ago. As part of that, we've created the Liberty Alliance Coalition, which now is about 20 groups and growing, 20 great groups that are all on the same side. And basically what we're going to do is help coordinate all these groups and coordinate our message such as the other side is coordinated, so that we can push back more effectively.
The anti-Muslim Brotherhood, perhaps.
That is absolutely
in
right.
In every sense of the word.
It is perfect.
Tim Brown, thank you so much,
Frank,
for
thank
your
you.
Great work and your leadership. It's an inspiration to see you as you go forth and, well, as they say in the Bible, go forth and multiply.
And multiply. Absolutely. Thanks,
Frank. Next up, we'll have Andy McCarthy, one of our other great leaders, who I'm delighted to say has taught Tim Brown and me a lot about all of this and who teaches each of you something about it each week. You're not going to want to miss what Andy has to say about Islamophobia. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement? Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Andy McCarthy, the author of Willful Blindness and The Grand Jihad, and innumerable outstanding essays at National Review Online. He's associated with the Foundation for Defense of Democracy and is a regular featured guest of us here at Secure Freedom Radio. And it's always a pleasure to have a chance to visit with Andy McCarthy because he has invariably done something interesting on the topics of the day. And that is certainly true today. Andy, it is great to have you back with us as always. Thank you for joining us.
It's always my privilege, Frank. Thank you.
Andy, let me start off by asking about this business of Islamophobia. We're hearing a lot about it lately. There was an event up on Capitol Hill yesterday involving Suhail Khan, a Muslim Brotherhood activist, I believe, and influence operator. The Congressional Muslim Staff Association and radical leftist operation funded by George Soros, I believe, called Think Progress, whose purpose was to inveigh against, well, me and thee and a number of other estimable folks who have been warning about the threat posed by Sharia and the Muslim Brotherhood's efforts to insinuate it into our country through stealthy techniques, among others, those that folks like Suhail Khan and his ilk have been associated with. I wonder what you make of this Islamophobia business and the kinds of people that are now, as I say, taking thee and me to task about it.
Well, you know, Frank, I figure probably the Muslim staffers on the Hill, I imagine, did what they usually do, which is, bring in someone like Anwar al-Awlaki, the al-Qaeda recruiter, to sort of prey on it and decide what position they ought to take, and then decided that anyone who criticized them was an Islamophobe. And, you know, if being associated with people whose position is that the United States Constitution ought to be supplanted with Sharia law, that we ought to give up our liberties, particularly our freedom of conscience, and substitute that, for example, with the Sharia standard that that calls for death for anyone who renounces Islam, and then in our spare hours, if we have any, to slum around with people like Mr. Al-Amoudi, who's serving a 23-year sentence after some terrorist financing activity and being involved in a plot to try to kill a foreign head of state. You know, I mean, if that's what makes you an Islamophobe, sign me up.
Yeah, let me ask you this. How about the proposition that these guys are making, that the Constitution of the United States is completely consistent with Sharia? As I say, the law of the land in Saudi Arabia. What say you?
Well, Sharia is consistent with the Constitution of the United States, Frank, only insofar as the Constitution of the United States contains within it the ingredients for undoing it. The framers did provide for an amendment process, which, you know, taken to its logical conclusion, could actually undo the arrangements that we have. And I don't mean to say that as a sort of a law school technicality. What I mean to say is that when these guys look you in the eye and they say that Sharia is perfectly consistent with the Constitution, I take what they mean by that to be that the Constitution actually does contain procedures for its own demise. And these guys certainly, if they want to substitute Sharia for our liberties, the Constitution's demise is precisely what they're asking for. But I think only in that sense.
Okay, but Andy, I'm asking whether the Constitution of the United States, as it is today, is Sharia inconsistent with the present Constitution of the United States, simply put?
Yes.
Right. So you're a former senior law enforcement official, you're a former federal prosecutor, you're a former top Justice Department official. Your view, this is not consistent.
And someone who can read the English language and just read the Constitution.
Right. It's not a job requirement, though, right? Okay, Andy, let me switch gears on you. You have written brilliantly, as ever, most recently in National Review Online, about a makeover of Libya's Muammar Gaddafi by the Obama administration. And this was a particularly delicious piece, as far as I'm concerned, because of the sarcasm that you bring to bear to eviscerate Condoleezza Rice and others in the Bush administration who first began the rehabilitation of Muammar Gaddafi and who now seem, among others, poised to make plain once again what a vile individual he is and to perhaps elevate others who are equally vile as our new best friends.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, look, I think that, Frank, too often, and this isn't just particular about Libya, although Libya is a great example of it, we have people in government who have a certain policy outcome that they would like to see, and that becomes their lens for interpreting reality. So suddenly in 2003-2004, Muammar Gaddafi, who is a dyed-in-the-wool enemy of the United States and terrorist, was suddenly refurbished by the Bush administration into somehow an American ally in the war on terror. And I don't think there was anything true about it, other than we wanted to see a certain outcome, and Gaddafi was a convenient political fit for it. So we basically changed our view of who he was without having him change his spots in the slightest. And the reason I think that it's important to revisit that history is because the same people who 10 minutes ago were calling Gaddafi an ally of the United States are now back to saying he's a committed enemy of the United States, except they're doing that as the précis for their latest policy option, which is that the Libyan opposition, like the opposition across the Islamic world, is somehow a bunch of secular James Madisons, rather than I think what we ought to see them as, which are mainly Islamists.
Folks like Yusuf al-Qaradawi.
Yes, well, he could be a Nobel Prize winner for all I know. After all, he's now issued a fatwa calling for the killing of Gaddafi, which we've now decided is a good thing. Obviously we have some common ground now with Sheikh Qaradawi, whose goal, by the way, is to conquer America and conquer Europe. So, but I do think that, Frank, we don't have friends in that part of the world, and we ought to, sort of grow up and recognize that.
And yeah, that's the bottom line, is that we don't have many friends in that part of the world. Even those that we impute friendship to are rarely actually qualifying. Andy, finally, let me turn to a narrative that is beginning to get a lot of play here in Washington at the moment. I'd like to just get your take on it. And that is that Al-Qaeda has lost in this great turmoil, that their prognostication that would take violence to bring down these various governments has been shown to be in error, and therefore they're now discredited and irrelevant. What say you about the future of Al-Qaeda there and elsewhere?
Yeah, right. I think to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood has infused a lot of the opposition in that part of the world, it can be said that Al-Qaeda lost in the sense that, among the various Islamist options, they're not number one on the list. They're, sort of pushed down to number two or number three. But let me just predict, if we could, Frank, that in that part of the world, I think that the rumors of Al-Qaeda's death are somewhat exaggerated.
So in your expert opinion, Andy McCarthy, it would be a mistake to write Al-Qaeda off just yet.
What's today, Thursday? I guess Thursday's an enmity day. Tomorrow will be a friendship day.
Yeah, friendship day indeed between Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood, folks who have a lot in common and are seeking exactly the same goals. Andy McCarthy, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, Claire Lopez on the threat from Iran at home and abroad.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'm fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope and life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard?
Play frisbee in the park?
Ride a bike?
Kick the soccer ball around?
Or dance in your room?
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back and joined by Claire Lopez, our colleague, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, a woman who has been a former clandestine officer in the Central Intelligence Agency, a woman who has done superb work, both conceptualizing and writing about the threat that we face from Sharia in general and specifically from Iran. And Claire, I want to talk to you about sort of both pieces of this in the context of what's going on inside Iran today and with respect to its increasing appetite, evidently, for projecting power. Let's start with arrests of the Iranian opposition inside the country, what that seems to be doing at the moment and likely to do with respect to efforts to change the regime in Tehran, which is arguably the one in that region most urgently in need of change.
Yes, well, thank you, Frank. It's really good to be with you. And exactly, it seems that the regime in Tehran is feeling emboldened, or perhaps it's a combination of emboldened and also threatened, because as we heard recently, just a few weeks ago, there were more protests out in the Iranian capital. Many more arrests took place. But also, we've heard that the opposition leaders, Mehdi Karoubi and also Mir Hussein Mousavi, the most prominent of the two opposition leaders identified with Iran's Green Movement, have been arrested, placed under house arrest just a couple of weeks ago. and then further taken from house arrest to an undisclosed prison location, incommunicado, essentially, with their families and followers. So the situation seems to be getting worse for the opposition in Iran.
And that presumably has something to do, not presumably entirely, but something to do at least with the extent to which they've received essentially no support from the United States or, for that matter, really the outside world. We're hearing a lot of support. We know what it looks like now when the United States government decides it wants to effect regime change, whether it's in Egypt or whether it's in Libya at the moment. They know how to communicate their desire to see the regime gone. There's been none of that with respect to Iran, or have I missed something?
No, you've missed nothing. It's shameful the way our administration and our political leadership has dealt with the democratic opposition in Iran. I mean, here is a people, overwhelmingly young, who have gone on the streets and demonstrated peacefully, been brutally suppressed, arrested, jailed, tortured, killed by the hundreds and thousands. And they want nothing more than a Western-style, secular, liberal democracy, and they have said so. And yet we don't express support for them. We don't offer them any tangible support at all.
One thing we know, Claire Lopez, from history, and I appreciate that you understand this very well, is that it can make all the difference in the world. We saw it in the Soviet Union. Natan Sharansky, one of the most prominent dissidents to this day, will talk with great feeling about the importance to his life, in fact, his survival, that was made possible by the support, the interest, the expressions of concern about him and his fellow refuseniks, as they were called. And it's just unimaginable that this government in the United States at the moment is going to such lengths, seemingly to prop up the government of Tehran rather than side with those who are seeking the outcome we should certainly be seeking as well, namely the removal of that government from power. Let me ask you about another question, Claire Lopez, that bears upon the point you've just made, that in the absence of our pressure, the government in Tehran is clearly emboldened to move chips on the board, if you will, move specifically naval vessels through the Suez Canal into the Eastern Mediterranean in connection with its ongoing relationship and presumably building capacity for mischief-making with Syria and some of its other friends in the region. Tell us what's going on in that space.
Well, absolutely. The Iranian regime is deeply involved in all of the activities that we're seeing in the Middle East going on right now. As you mentioned recently, they sent a couple of warships through the Suez Canal with Egyptian regime permission and on up into to dock at Syria. The new defense agreement between Iran and Syria also calls for the building of an Iranian port at the Syrian location on the Mediterranean called Latakia. So Iran is going to build a seaport, is going to build a port facility on the Syrian shore of the southern southeastern Mediterranean. In addition to this, we're seeing that Iran is very deeply involved in a working alliance, is the only way to put it, with the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, this is Shia working together with Sunni. And we know this in part because WikiLeaks has revealed that State Department and embassy and also military meetings and cables have revealed that the United States has been perfectly well aware since at least more than a year ago that Iran has been interfering in Egypt by working with providing support to the Muslim Brotherhood in addition to its ongoing support for many years for Hezbollah and Hamas. So we're seeing that. We also know that Muslim Brotherhood opposition figures found refuge in Iran and have been living there for a long time. Since the murder of Sadat, as a matter of fact, in 1981, they fled Egypt and found refuge in Iran. So
oh. Well, let's drill yeah. down on that, Claire Lopez, because we're endlessly told, and this goes back to something that I just discussed with Andy McCarthy before you joined us, about these rifts within the community of people who share a deep attachment to Sharia and a common determination to impose it worldwide, whether they're Al-Qaeda on the one hand and Muslim Brotherhood on the other, or whether, as you say, they're Sunni and Shia. In your estimation, how real are these differences? Not that there aren't, of course, differences, particularly with respect to some points of, you know, theology or tactics, but how real are those differences when it comes to a willingness to make common cause against their common enemies, namely us?
Well, you've named it, I've nailed it exactly, Frank. Yeah, I mean, in their leisure time, sure, they have lots of theological points of difference that they can discuss. And when it comes down to local levels, for instance, in a place like Iraq, we've seen a terrible, you know, Shia-Sunni atrocities and warfare. But at the greater level, it's something called balanced opposition. And when you get to the top level, it is Islam versus the infidels or the non-Muslim world. And at that point, the doctrine of Sharia unifies. It doesn't divide. And in fact, of course, in all the schools of Islamic jurisprudence, be they Sunni or Shia, the major ones are in agreement on all the major issues, including things like jihad against the infidel.
Yeah, and the necessity of triumph of Sharia and the restoration of the caliph. Chris, let me ask you this. Claire Lopez of the Center for Security Policy, also one of our co-authors in the Team B2 report, Sharia, the Threat to America. We're told Saudi Arabia is going to be having demonstrations on the 11th of March that the efforts of the government, the kingdom, to buy off unhappy people is not working. As one of the reporters on NPR put it this morning, quote, money is not enough, unquote. Give us a quick 30-second dump on what you think is coming up next in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, the Saudis already have taken preemptive action, as we've seen, in opening the purse strings, as it were, to provide more financial benefits to their people, extra scholarships for students in America, for one thing, where there are something like 45,000 students studying from Saudi Arabia. But what is happening is not people taking to the streets so much as it is things like setting up websites. It is protests in a sort of a less overt manner than going onto the streets. But there's a lot of discontent in Saudi Arabia. And you might not think about it, but there's a lot of poverty in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and that unhappiness will almost certainly translate into greater turmoil in the days ahead, is my guess. Claire Lopez, we'll be following it closely with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk with you very soon.
Great.
Sarah Carter is up next.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though.
Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by our cleanup batter, Sarah Carter. She joins us each week from the Washington Examiner, where she reports brilliantly on national security matters. Sarah, we catch you on a cell phone on the road, and we're hoping that our connectivity will not be interrupted for the duration of the call. And thank you so much for joining us, as always.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Frank. Thanks.
Good. Let's start with a couple of topical things that are happening at the moment. Much thrashing around going on in Washington about whether we should try to impose a no-fly zone in Libya or not, whether we can, as a practical matter, do it. And if so, what would be entailed, the costs, the risks, and so on? What are you hearing from your beat in Washington?
Well, I'm certainly hearing from a lot of sources in North Africa. There's a lot of concern that the United States is not standing by, and this is coming from, you know, sources who have pretty much abandoned Gaddafi and those that have always opposed Gaddafi, that the U.S. isn't standing up for what they see as an uprising against this dictatorship and against this cruel, what they describe as crazed man at this point in time. So there is a lot of concern coming from that part of the world that the opposition is kind of being left to fend for itself on its own with very little resources. Obviously, it's a concern in the United States. I mean, the Defense Department has serious concerns about how to take care of the no-fly zone.
situation. And as General Mattis said, you know, it would require, you know, taking out their central hub in Libya. So we would have to initiate like the first attack, in order to disable their fly zone. So at this point in time, I mean, obviously it's taken a while. There's a lot of debate in the Pentagon as to whether this is worth it or not. But let me tell you this, Frank. I spoke to folks who, military personnel who remember back in the days of Bosnia when the no-fly zone was initiated and how important that was, in reducing casualties on the ground. They believe it's vitally important to do the same here if we're to stand out and take a step ahead. I also spoke to people, you know, regarding the humanitarian aid that the opposition needs at this point in time. And some people were very disappointed that France took the lead in that and that we weren't. So there's a lot of concern that the administration is not standing up and speaking out loud enough regarding what is happening in Libya. One of my Libyan sources said, you know, he was very angry with the president. He said, at one point in time, he said 100%, and this is coming from Minister Al-Rishi, he said, at one point in time, all the Libyan people, if they could have voted in the election, 100% of them would have voted for President Obama. And he says now they're so disappointed. They feel that that they're being betrayed. He said, you know, it was interesting. He said, you know, he should be honored that we feel this way about him, that we care so much about the United States. He said, we wouldn't do this to China because we don't care about China. You know, he said, we're standing up for something that we believe in, and we believe in, you know, freedom, and the opposition is fighting and giving their blood and their lives. So well, they want to see the administration.
Will be interesting to watch, Sarah Carter, as to whether, in fact, those who seek freedom will prevail in Libya any more than they are going to, I think, elsewhere in the region. But the mechanical and budgetary costs and other issues that are associated with trying to do a no-fly zone, including preemptive military action, are clearly very much on the minds of those who are going to be responsible for executing this strategy, if that's in fact where we go, and we'll be following it closely with you as always. Sarah, let me switch gears, if I can, to Germany, where there's been an attack on some American servicemen, two killed, and the perpetrator, apparently, we're told this is a subject of intense investigations. There's a chance that this might have been, we're told, quote, an extremist Islamist ideology at work. What do you think is the first clue that that's the case, and where is this likely to take us if, in fact, it's confirmed?
Well, I believe that he called out Allahu Akbar. I mean, you know, God is great. It's a common phrase used right before a suicide attack or, you know, an attack on a Western person or
yeah, jihadism. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the first clue would be that he shouted Allahu Akbar. I think that what we're seeing here, we won't see, we'll see again continuously in the future. These are, you know, extremists, homegrown, however you want to call it, terrorist acts, and individuals taking it upon themselves to kind of initiate their own attack in the name of Allah. And you know, these are Islamist extremists. And I was talking to folks in Germany who were even upset with their own German government because they feel that, you know, even in Germany there is this kind of political correctness and this fear to make statements right off the bat. You know, everyone wants to investigate for long periods of time, and they fear that this type of attitude is just allowing this type of aggression to progress. So I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more news on this.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know, I wonder whether it's coincidental that the Prime Minister of Turkey was in the country just before all this and spoke about the need not to assimilate into the country, whether this might have given encouragement to these characters. We'll be following, again, that story closely with you as well. Sarah, I know you've
you've been spending a lot of time, of course, in the Afghan-Pakistan theater. There was a very distressing development there where another of these Sharia-adherent guys murdered a man who was a Christian member of the cabinet responsible for minority affairs, including those of Christians in Pakistan, on the grounds, apparently, that this man was not only a Christian and therefore an infidel, but was not supportive of the implementation of Sharia's blasphemy laws in Pakistan. What does this portend, would you say, for the current and future trajectory of the Pakistani government?
Well, this is definitely a warning to the rest of the world that Pakistan and the government of Pakistan, the very fragile, if you want to call it, democratic government of Pakistan, is breaking apart. I was speaking to one of the minister's very close friends last night, who was the minister who was killed, who was executed. They're very concerned about the situation in Pakistan now. This was a great loss. This was a great man. He was willing to speak out. He was willing to risk his life to speak the truth of what he believed. And right now what we're seeing in Pakistan is a very strong, growing, extremist Islamist movement in certain areas, and one that isn't being quelled. And unfortunately, like we said earlier, this ideology is spreading. It's, you know, last night, the source that I was speaking to called it a cancer and something that's way out of control. So I think that we have to be very concerned about what's happening in Pakistan. And I'll make one little point here. General Michael Flynn said several weeks ago when I saw him, he said it's not about, you know, being friends with Pakistan to save Afghanistan or working with Pakistan to save Afghanistan. He said if we don't win Afghanistan, we are going to lose Pakistan. And I thought that was a very poignant and very thoughtful way of putting this, because Pakistan certainly is at a crux in time where we could watch Pakistan's government completely disintegrate.
Yeah, very, very worrying. And again, we'll bear considerable watching. Last point for about a minute. Tell us about Bradley Manning, the private first class in the United States Army, who has now been charged in connection with more counts relating to this WikiLeaks business.
Well, certainly. I mean, 22 new charges, one in particular, which could lead to the death penalty. I hear they're not going to push the death penalty. They're, you know, this is going to be a life in prison. They are basically accusing him of aiding and abetting the enemy. And, you know, talking to folks that work in intelligence, they put the blame solely on him, more so than they do WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who released the information. They said, you know, Bradley Manning had a job. He was on the low rung of the totem pole, but he basically was charged with, you know, keeping U.S. secrets. And if these allegations prove to be true, many of them said he's a traitor to this nation.
No, that's so, certainly what it seems to come down to. Sarah Carter, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your thoughts on these very important breaking stories. We'll be looking forward to talking with you further about them, and in particular the need to take corrective action against the sort of insider threat that Bradley Manning is accused of, and hopefully, if proven guilty, will be severely punished for. Sarah Carter, again, thank you for joining us. We'll talk with you again next week, and we'll talk with all of you, I hope, again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.